I would like to take a moment and thank the ASU engineers at the Life Science Wing Center for putting a 110 electrical outlet on the exterior of their building and without a lock for free power access. We are plugged in now. This is I'm going to have to come back and do an architectural tour. It's interesting just seeing. You can tell about what decade each one was built, or which it, maybe not even the one the decade it was built, but at least the because this one obviously is not a 1970s model. That's a much older turn of the century, but I know it's not that old. It's
well, the one thing that I noticed after four decades of being on this campus is that the trees here are so much taller, and it's amazing that over near the sciences building this morning, right off of near Gamage Auditorium, there's a grove of 30 Chinese pistache trees that were not there when I was here 30 years ago. And
I often just, hear you recommend the Chinese pistache.
It's my favorite tree.
I walked through that grove coming in this morning because that's where I parked. And I thought, man, these are really cool trees. What are these? And then there was the Chinese pistache stand for the Tour de Trees, which has us out here.
Right there. And they just impress me more and more that I see them. And now that they're a little more common and the nurseries are developing some great cultivars, they're just a stately tree. They're beautiful. The shape, the structure is strong. You know, that's what we're always looking for. A lot of the faster growing trees are prone to breakage because they're putting on wood so fast that they tend to dump a lot more litter and they tend to be prone to breakage. And a lot of our, unfortunately, our hybrid mesquites and Palo Verdes tend to have narrow angles of attachment on a lot of branches. You have to watch for those because those can split out. But the Chinese pistache has really nice, more obtuse angled points of attachment between branches. And they're structurally as strong as can be. And a lot like the Chinese elm, which until recently was my favorite tree.
Got replaced.
But it's got replaced by this Chinese pistache. And that's a really great stand. If you haven't seen a Chinese pistache and would like to get a great idea of how they can look in a mature size, come down to ASU just a little bit east and northeast of the Gamage Auditorium. And it's a great stand.
Go to rosieonthehouse.com and click on the events tab. Then click on Tour de Trees. There is a PDF there that you can download. It has information about today's event along with a map of all the trees that you can self-navigate to. You can walk or ride a bike if you'd like, but I'm going to say it. You're not going to walk more than 2 miles from parking by the time you walk to all these trees and back to where you park.
Yeah, it's a
you'd
pretty
hard pressed to put on 2 miles. So it's
and what I noticed too is, as I mentioned before, there's several other trees that are not listed on the tour map that you've provided that are part of the Arboretum tour. And I passed several of additional trees with plaques on them while I was walking the tour. So lots of other really cool trees here on campus.
We were at the white sapote. Is that how you pronounce
mm-hmm.
it? There's a mesquite, a pistache, Aleppo pine, cork oak, pecan, date palm, cottonwood, olive, Montezuma cypress, and what's a carbo?
It's a carob.
Carob. C-A-R-B-O. B-O.
That's a little typo. Yeah, there's a beautiful carob tree here. There's several on campus. The one tree that is really quite amazing is that Montezuma cypress. That is near the law building. That tree was there when I was here 37 years ago, and it's about 20 feet taller than it was then. And it is one cool specimen tree. You will not see one of those that tall around Phoenix very often.
Now, at each one of these trees, there are certified arborists, and they're all out here volunteering their time today. We saw Jesse Sanchez from APS.
Dominique is at the Cork Oak right now.
And then the gentleman that we had
Rick Robinson. He's at the carob tree today.
Oh, boy.
And I haven't even been around since earlier this morning when I did the tour before everyone showed up, who the other arborists are at the various trees. But, yeah, you get a little educational walk today in addition to a beautiful exercise to get around to the tour.
All brought to you in part by the Arizona Forestry Division, Arizona Community Tree Council, Arizona Nursery Association, Valley Permaculture Alliance, Arizona State University, big tree movers. Oh, Bonnie got a sneak plug in
there. I did see Bonnie walking across campus a little while ago.
And Forest Service Department. let's bring our calls in. Jennifer, what do you have lined up for us at 1-888-767-4348 or text to 411-923?
Well, I'm in studio here alone with Bree, and we're sitting here looking out the windows at this beautiful blue sky and white puffy clouds and wishing we were with you down at the Tour de Trees. We have a couple callers who've called in with questions, and one was Bee. And John, she has oleanders. They're a couple years old, well, probably like 4 years old, and she's got that, the leaves, some of them turning brown and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wondering if it was watering. I asked her. She said that she waters every other day for 20 minutes. And so she's wondering, is that yellow and brown maybe water-related or not?
Well, it very well could be. That's pretty frequent watering for this time of year. It'd be better to water a little more deeply, a little less frequently. Just make sure that the entire root zone is saturated to a full depth. With a plants that young, probably a depth of 12 to 18 inches would be sufficient right now. And if she's doing that and you're getting the full depth of saturation to the bottom of the root ball, to the deepest roots there, then she doesn't have to water probably for 4 or 5 days, maybe even a week. Putting too much water, we call it putting water on top of water on top of water, is not a good situation. It can cause an anaerobic condition underground, and the roots can simply suffocate, and it can lead to yellowing. There is a very serious bacterial infection called Xylella fastidiosa. It's a leaf scorch.
Say what?
It's a leaf scorch disease, a bacterial leaf scorch that infects a lot of our oleanders here in the valley, and it's very, very serious. There's no known cure for it. If you do have it, and you see, determine that it's not an irrigation problem, you might want to take a tissue sample, a leaf sample, and turn it into a local laboratory for analysis to see if you do have the leaf scorch. If you do, you'll need to replace the oleanders with something different. Unfortunately, there's no known cure for bacterial leaf scorch. It's ravaging many neighborhoods around the Phoenix area. Some of the our large estates and homes and in the Arcady district in central Phoenix area where they have large irrigated lots are losing all their oleanders. Hundreds and hundreds, literally thousands of trees have been lost over the last several years, and more are on their way out right now. I have several customers who are contemplating what to do because they have huge hedges, hundreds of feet long.
And is that specific the whole to hedges. Oleanders then? Is it only?
Pardon?
Is it specific to oleanders?
It's specific to oleanders. Yeah, it's vectored by an insect, and once it gets into the vascular system of the plants, there's really no known cure for the disease, and it spreads throughout the entire hedge. It might start in one part, and then it will spread. And despite our efforts to kind of cut it back or cut it out, cut out the infected areas, we haven't been able to stop it, and it's eventually worked its way through. It causes discoloration and an ugly dieback of some of the foliage. It doesn't just kill the plants overnight, but it's just a matter of time before these beautiful, lush hedges get sparse and start dying back.
And replanting oleanders in that area is just going to...
It's really not a good idea. We've seen some people cut them down and take them out and put new ones back in. There's some talk about the pink variety of oleanders are less susceptible, but we've even seen the pinks get infected, so I'm just recommending people plant something different. We have recommended if you do have oleanders that are affected and you have to take them out, there are a couple of good options for replacement. Of course, citrus, sour orange is our number one recommendation because they can they grow beautifully as a hedge and give you some privacy. You can also think about hop seed. It's not my top choice, but it is a nice hedging plant. And also Arizona rosewood is another option. There's some other types of hedges you can try, but sour orange seems to be the most practical and the most durable and the easiest to maintain. You want to have that consistent look. You don't want a part of it to be growing different height than the others, or looking not out you know, somehow not having that uniform appearance. So citrus is really fits that bill because you can buy those and plant them on 3 or 4 foot centers and have a pretty nice screening hedge in a few years' time.
Can I ask one more question for Bea?
Sure.
She's also struggling with spider mites, and she said they're even getting in the house and biting. Is that what they do?
Never heard of that. Never heard of mites. The mites that get into our trees, some are almost too small to be seen. So I'm not sure that they have biting parts that could affect humans.
Okay.
But yeah, we get a lot of spider mites this time of year, especially on cypress and a few other types of plants, junipers, and they form a little web. You can usually see the webs on the leaves of your plants, and they need some attention. If you can't deal with them with high pressure water or insecticidal soap, there are some other heavier chemicals that can be used to spray them.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Was that the only question?
No, I do have a question from a texter as well, as if you'd like that one. John, he's listening to you talk about it being a good time to prune, and he has a Texas Ranger and a Bird of Paradise. And how would you prune those two?
Yeah, this is a great time to be cutting some of those back if you're wanting to reduce the size of some of your overgrown shrubs. Now's a good time to make the pruning cuts. The Texas Ranger is pretty durable. You can make some significant reduction cuts on those. I wouldn't recommend cutting them all the way back to the ground like we would an oleander or a bougainvillea or a Mexican Bird of Paradise or lantana or some of our other shrubs that you can cut back radically. We call it hard pruning, almost to the ground. Sage, your Texas Ranger is a type of sage, and they you can cut them back significantly, but be a little less aggressive. But now's a good time because it's cool enough where the new growth can emerge and get established before the real hot weather comes in another month or so.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you've got a question for John Eisenhower, you can also text in to 411-923. Ask your question. And you know what? If you come down, we're actually, if you're on down here on the Tour de Trees and you're streaming the broadcast on your app through the KTAR app, you can come find us at the Life Science Tower and ask a question live on the air. We're plugged in on the west side of it, right next to the mesquite tree on number 4 on the tour. It's a beautiful day and a beautiful opportunity to experience a wealth of education, John, as it relates to trees. You really couldn't anywhere else. There's a different arborist with a different background, different experience at every single tree.